Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today, we're going to be playing Kanagawa, designed by Bruno Cathala, which we've played Seven Wonders Duel, Five Tribes, King Domino, Mr. Jack, and Charles Chevalier of Abyss, which we have not played. The artist is Jade Moshe, and it is published by Yellow.
Oh my God.
1840, in Kanagawa, the Great Bay of Tokyo, the master Hokusai decided to open a painting school to share his art with his disciples. You are one of these disciples, and more than anything, you want to prove yourself worthy of the crazy old artist. It's kind of harsh. Follow his teachings to expand your studio and paint your preferred subjects. Trees, animals, characters, buildings, all while paying attention to the changing of the seasons in order to make the most harmonious print, the one that will become the work of your lifetime. The mechanics are card drafting, hand management, pattern building, push your luck, set collection, and worker placement. The box art is a very colorful painting of a stag on a cliff overlooking a, Mount Fuji's in the background.
And I'm assuming Edo.
But Mount Fuji's not right there, so.
No, geographically, it is not accurate. Right.
There's also not a cliff in the middle of the ocean, I guess.
having flown around Tokyo and around the Tokyo Bay, I don't think the picture is geographically accurate.
So, based on all this, would you pull it off a shelf?
Absolutely. I really love the artwork. It's like I know we were making fun of Kiwi earlier about that whole watercolors, but it really does have that, those muted tones that you actually get from a watercolor. I think he misapplies
actually a watercolor.
I think you're on the right track.
Guys are assholes.
And I mean, I am just fascinated by Japanese art, and have been for many decades. So, and then the game designers, I feel like hit or miss some of them, but
Bruno Cathala has mostly been a miss.
Yeah. The box itself is beautiful. So I'm hoping that, and it's got push your luck, which, yeah.
I picked this one because I was going through the list and pulled up the art and was like, yep, we're playing this. So the box art definitely got me. The description is interesting. I think we've played one or maybe two painting-based games. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this one compares. And the mechanics list sounds interesting. So it has some that we like in there.
The painting game you're talking about, that was the one that you guys played at Gen Con before I got there, right?
Atelier, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I played another one, but maybe I'm wrong.
I feel like you did too. I feel like there was one, like, I know Atelier, but I feel like there was another one as well.
Maybe I was just reading. I know Renegade has one that we should probably also play.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Or maybe we saw it and we didn't.
Yeah. Anyway, Kiwi.
Yeah. I think the only thing that would give me pause is the designer, just because of the games that we listed, there was only one that I actually enjoyed playing. I'm curious to see how this one goes based on that. I mean, the art alone, I would pick it up and look at it, and I would probably play it based off the description, because that does sound interesting.
So yeah, based on that description, what do you think, BP? How are we playing this thing?
How are we going to play this? So we're going to expand our studios, and then thinking about, to a certain extent, Tokaido, which Kiwi had brought up, this idea that you really could maybe build screens together. So I feel like, so in Atelier
building.
Yeah. In Atelier, we had to collect the cubes, the colors, in order to get certain cards. But in here,
The cubes were paint. So we were like collecting paint to make painting.
But we've got pattern building and card drafting. So I feel like we are doing the more kind of Tokaido idea, right? Where you're putting together that tableau. Yeah.
So we're going to be drafting different, like, paintings is the cards.
And yeah,
you're going to be trying to piece them together into a pattern.
Yes. because when I get into the history thing, most of the painting itself, Japanese painting, was done mostly on screens, right? So for doors or to set behind for room separation and things like that. So
how are we pushing our luck?
So my guess is like maybe you don't want to draw too many, like maybe point based, like you have like leftover pieces.
I would say like maybe for tableau, or like building a tableau, like you're drawing, but like if you draw the wrong one, like you ruin your painting and you got to start over or something. What sets are we collecting? Probably the types, because it says like trees, animals, characters, and buildings.
Yeah.
So you probably have different types of paintings and you're doing multiples at once. And then who's your worker?
Your artist. Yeah, your little artist.
Unless it's like literally placement of the work.
Maybe.
it's a very literal mechanic.
You're the artist. So is it like Atelier where you have like art students that you're sending out to do things? But what are you placing them on?
Yeah, because we're the disciples, right?
I think we're onto something here. So tell us more about the painting and Mr.
Hokusai,
the crazy old guy, apparently.
Yeah, so Hokusai is probably one of the more famous Japanese artists that I think most anyone can think of. And I mean, he did do some painting in his early days, but what he is most known for are his woodblock prints. And just by that name alone, you realize they are not actual paintings. While they are woodblocks and you would put ink on the block and then rub the paper over and you could write multiple copies of the same work. He is most famous for the big giant.
Oh,
blade.
I know his work.
The 36 views of Mount Fuji. The great wave is everybody has probably seen it. A big tsunami wave coming up as the center. So that's part of his series of the 36 views of Mount Fuji. He also did a lot of ukiyo-e. Woodblock prints of kind of the city scenes, if you will, of what we might call like the red light district of Edo, but which was also very popular in collections. And so this whole period that he was a part of is the Edo period, and probably again what most Westerners would readily recognize for Japanese art. And painting during this time was still a mixture. Most of the history of Japanese painting was a mixture of outside and inside elements, which is pretty typical of most Japanese cultural history, in that in kind of the earlier medieval periods, a lot of kind of Chinese techniques were imported and adapted to typical Japanese kind of thought and mentality. So you'll still see like a lot of the screens imitating the Chinese focus on nature scenes, various types of trees, but then specifically Japanese, like the blossoms. So one of the big Japanese painters is really famous for a red and white plum blossom painting in a screen. And they are typically also for this period painted on gold. And so kind of the emphasis then that comes out of this is that while this period did diminish the local lords and their power in favor of the shogunate, it was also a time when merchants, this is why I think of it as kind of the Japanese equivalent of the Renaissance, right? Because the European Renaissance in the 16th and 17th century really focused on merchants who were participating in global trade networks, being able to afford and patronize a lot of artwork. And that's what happens in the Edo period as well. So it represents these kind of growing class of people who want to participate in these cultural events and buy and supply a lot of art. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets played into it, because I feel like it will. I mean, right, artists just can't make and live off of their art. The art schools were created to help manufacture art that people obviously wanted to buy. And so there you go. Here's your history of Japanese art.
Do you guys want to know how to play?
Yes, because I feel like we nailed it.
Mm. You did not.
We didn't?
Okay, so no. I mean, maybe some part, but no. For the most part, no. Over the course of the game, players are going to expand their painting and their learning techniques and try to earn harmony points in order to be deemed worthy by the Grandmaster Hokusai and win the game. The game is going to end harmony when the lesson points. Deck is empty, or if a player has at least 11 cards in their print at the end of a round. So first player is chosen however we want, which I think is a Bruno Cathala thing. So I did come up with some extras.
All of which you're going to
last
win.
Last to visit Japan. Yeah,
I know,
exactly.
Because I was going to say, I left Japan right Tokyo. Before he did.
Or I also thought maybe perhaps the last to paint a painting or purchase a painting.
Ooh, Eric purchases artwork all the time. Although I did, I don't know if it could be considered a painting.
I can say that the last time I was in Tokyo was January 2012, but I didn't leave the Narita airport. So, but I was technically in Tokyo and I have flown mostly up Mount Fuji.
I feel like he wins the Japan game. Let's give him this one.
Okay. You can have this one.
All right. So we're each going to get starting tiles that are going to give us two brush pawns. And those are kind of our workers during the game. And it will also give us a starting landscape style that we've already mastered. So the first thing that's going to happen in a round, it's broken up into three steps, is we're going to follow the teachings of the master. So we're going to draw lesson cards equal to the number of players, and we're going to place them on the first row of the school board. And now some of these spots are lighter colored and some are darker. So the lighter colored spots are going to be face up. And then the darker color spots, the card is going to be face down. So you're not going to know what's on the backside or on the front. The backside is going to be associated with animals, trees, buildings, or characters. So you will know generally what the subject is on the front, but you won't know anything else. The next thing that's going to happen is you're either going to, each player in turn order is going to make a choice on whether they want to broaden their knowledge or put their knowledge into practice. So broadening your knowledge is basically you're going to pass and you're going to wait for more lesson cards to come out. For putting into practice, you're going to choose one of the columns on the school board and you're going to take all the lessons from that column. Now, the cards are broken up into two sides. One side is going to be the studio side, and the other side is going to be the print side. So once you take the column, you immediately have to decide whether or not you're going to expand your studio or expand your print. So expanding your studio is going to give you more brush pawns, so basically more workers. It's going to let you learn new landscape types. It's going to provide you some abilities, mainly moving the brushes, which is how you're going to be able to put prints on your add to your print. Or it could allow you to keep lesson cards between rounds because normally you have to play them all. So cards played to your studio will immediately grant you the effects on the card. And to expand your print, you have to use your brush tokens. So the studio cards are going to say, like, have an ocean and a circle underneath that ocean landscape. The print side is going to have a certain number of landscape icons to the below it. So like if a card has two ocean landscape icons, you have to have two ocean landscape spots in your studio, and then you're going to put your brush tokens on those to be able to paint it. So that's where the worker placement aspect comes into it. And then once you've placed a brush and used it, you can't use it again that round. You have to wait for the next round. And then finally, you're going to take the corresponding diplomas if applicable. So the diplomas are kind of like victory point tokens, and you will gain them based on if you meet that requirement. So like one of them is if you have three trees in your painting, you can take the three tree victory token or diploma. The thing is, if you take it, you can only have one of each color, and there are seven colors for which you can take. So if you take that tree token, you can't take another tree token. You can decide to pass and say, hey, I'm going to go for one of those diplomas that has a much higher victory point, I can't go back to the three and gain it. So once I pass on a diploma that I could have taken, I no longer have access to it. So once all the players who have decided to put their stuff into their knowledge into practice have taken their turns, then if there's anyone left, we're going to do a new lesson. So we're going to draw new cards, but we're only going to draw cards based on the number of columns that still have cards in it. So say during the first round, I take a card, there's only two left. So we're only going to draw two new lesson cards to expand those columns. If you are the last person going into that lesson, you can't pass. You have to take one of those columns. And then once the round is complete, the player with the assistant pawn is going to gain the grandmaster pawn, which is essentially the first player token. And the round is repeated at step one. If the last card is ever drawn from the lesson deck, players can't pass and you have to select a column. And then the game will end once we've all gone through the putting our knowledge into practice. Or if somebody has 11 cards in their print, the round will also end. You're going to get points based on the number of cards in your print. Each card in your print with a string of identical seasons. So the print is going to have a type of landscape, a subject, and a season. So if you have like four spring portions of a print, you would get 4 points if that's your longest string of identical seasons. Prints and lessons will also have harmony points printed on them, so you'll gain those. You'll gain points for any diploma tiles that you've taken, and the player who ends up with the Grandmaster token at the end will also get an additional 2 points. There are no tiebreakers in this game, so if you share, you just share. And that is it. That is all the rules.
Yeah, we were not close on this one.
Yeah. Well, let's paint.
We just finished a game of Kanagawa. To recap, Kiwi had a measly 28 painting points.
Harmony points. These ones actually have names. They are harmony points.
In the spirit of harmony, I and BP decided to share our painting victory with 41 painting points each.
Woo! We beat Kiwi!
In the painting game, so I guess it all makes sense. What was our shared strategy, BP?
I was going for the seasons. Mm-hmm. And then just trying, after picking up on the season, to look for how I could get diplomas.
I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward, and you could take different routes on which diplomas you're going for based on what mm-hmm. you draw. I think we both got the people diploma. She had the same peoples. I had different peoples. We both got a building diploma, and BP got a tree one, while I got an animal one and the painter assistant one, or whatever those are called. You can go about it different ways based on what you draw, but it's all sort of the same kind of overall strategy, right? Unless you did something different, Kiwi?
No, I was trying to do something similar. I just didn't get the landscapes I needed in order to paint some of the bigger paintings.
What'd you think of the theme?
I liked it. I thought the theme was the building the paintings and like learning to paint better. I felt like, you know, as you build out your studio and you get more of those landscape pieces or those landscape spots that you can play on, I thought it was interesting. I felt like I was making a painting and learning how to make the painting.
I think the wording like they use a lot of stuff is good. Like you learn, like you to pass around, you learn, and that lets you have more access to more options. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah. You know, you can paint or you can expand your studio, which gives you like, just like little wording things like that, that kind of make the theme come together.
And you get diplomas.
Yeah. It's just like you're graduating. Yeah.
Look at me. I'm doing better. I'm learning stuff. I'm improving my craft.
I can paint this one person.
Yeah, I can paint this one person over and over, and I have mastered this person.
Yeah. It definitely, I mean, it's a very funky looking image if I'm going for this to be a painting, but, got, you know, the same traveler passing in front of the mountain right next to on a plane. Maybe it's a time sequence thing.
So the art, I guess the big question is, does the art and the game live up to the art on the box? BP.
I think so. I think the cards are, they're nice. They're also right clear in their labeling mechanisms. I mean, they don't have that same watercolor. They do actually look more like woodblock prints. Mm-hmm. But they're still very pleasing to look at. Pleasing on the eye. They do remind me of Tokaido, which I know we keep bringing up, even though I don't think like the artist is the same at all. But
no, it's not.
Yeah, I think it's really good. Like, this would have a really good table presence. Mm-hmm. It's colorful, but not like overwhelmingly. And then the iconography is really good. I think it was pretty clear on what you're getting and how they, you sort of flip the cards and can align things. And even though like it's interesting, you know, the painting may not make perfect sense, but it does flow together pretty well, which is hard to do when people are drawing random cards and just putting them down. Yeah. So I think it's pretty cool when you can have like a rant, like, you know, Tokaido has the tableau artwork, but it's in a set order. Yeah. So of course it looks good, but this is, mm-hmm. you know, it's a challenge to do that in a game. And I think they did it well.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing about the table presence. You know, I'm just looking at my print now and, you know, everything pretty much lines up almost exactly. And there are a couple repeats in the background, but, you know, that makes sense in terms of like actually paying for art and all that. You know, they have a background image and then a foreground image, but there are enough differences that, you know, it does make it look nice. And I think this is a game where, you know, there's no text to sort of take away and the icons are pretty self-explanatory. It's a very nice game to look at as you're playing, and you have the time to look at it too. Cause I know we've seen it in other games in the past where the art is nice, but you never look at it because you're too busy doing other things.
But this, you're actually like studying your board constantly to see what like combinations you have. So you're always just sort of looking through it. So yeah.
And the art is the centerpiece.
All right. Mechanics, Kiwi.
I think from like a teaching aspect, I feel like the mechanics, like Eric, you said it with, gave names to things that made sense, you know, like, hey, I'm going to learn more, or I'm going to put my stuff into practice. I thought the like card drafting and then, you know, your worker placement was, you're moving your brushes around to get to those different landscapes. Like that made for an interesting kind of mechanic. I thought all the mechanics went well together. And the fact that the rule book kind of, it used different words, like instead of pass, like it had something very specific, broaden your knowledge. But it made enough sense that even though it didn't use a traditional word that we see in board gaming, they were words that made sense.
Right.
You know, it wasn't dogma in innovation.
Right. Push your luck card drafting, I really liked. Yeah. I don't know that we've done that before, but yeah. I really enjoyed that kind of just central mechanic. The one I think difficulty was sort of, so to get the diploma, you can pass on it to get a better one, but it kind of came up at the end where it's like, well, I didn't even, you know, as a new first playthrough, oh, I didn't realize like there was a one based on the arrow symbol or one based on a number of people, but I got like, so like one was like, you can pick it up with three workers or there's a higher one for four workers. So like when you get three workers, you kind of automatically pass if you don't take the diploma, I guess. Even if you don't explicitly know that you're passing.
Yeah, the rule book does say you must immediately choose whether to take it or leave it.
Right. Mm. So as a first playthrough, like I think at the end of the game, like the three worker one was not taken. And I don't think either of you knew about it or had really paid attention to that one.
I only had two workers, so it never came up for me. But yeah, BP could have had the option. There was also the landscape one where I had two different landscapes, so I could have taken that last diploma. Not that either one would have helped me win.
No, but I think just sort of that, if you're thinking about other things, you don't even realize you have the potential to get a diploma and you automatically pass on it.
Oh, yeah. I could have beat you if I had taken that one.
You could have beaten me if you had taken either of kind of the arrow one or the worker one or the combo one. So I think that's just kind of a little wonky thing that is probably not as difficult if you own it and play this multiple times. But as a new player, I could see people getting frustrated being like, I didn't even know I could have won, but I didn't even know I could have done that. So just kind of my one observation.
I love the push your luck. I think every time like we were like, I'm going to wait and see what happens. You know, like I think it's something that adds this element of spontaneity that you know, helps, I don't know, it, as a mental mechanic, right? It kind of keeps you on your toes, makes you keep guessing and keep, you know, pushing beyond your boundaries to see what you're going to get next. As opposed to, I don't know, I feel like it helps thwart a little bit of analysis paralysis to a certain extent, you know? I mean, and that's one of the things that I really like. I mean, card drafting, you know, I'm like, nah, whatever. I do like pattern building and the set collection part of it as well, because my OCD feels like it's being satisfied.
I think that's a lot of people. Rules, BP, how was it to learn?
It is definitely one of those ones where, you know, it might take a round or two before you kind of get the swing of it. But and there were a couple of times I had to be like, OK, wait, can I do this or not? But again, for first playthrough, I don't think it was an incredibly high learning curve, like you mentioned with the diplomas. Like, obviously, that's something you would get down as you played it multiple times. But I think overall, like, not super, super easy, but not super difficult, like a little bit in between. And the cards, once you got the hang of what the symbols were, they're pretty straightforward. There's not too much, you know, complication to it.
Yeah, I think the first round I kind of threw away because I didn't really get the whole how you're going to pass, then you're going to get more cards. Then you're
yeah.
Gonna so like I kind of just was like, I'm going to pick this face down one because that seems like a fun thing to do. And I was like, well, that was probably really dumb. Like, I don't think you would ever do that. Mm-hmm. Once the first round, I was like, oh, that's how it works. After mm-hmm. that, it all made perfect sense. So Kiwi teaching it.
Oh, I was going to say like the rule book was laid out really well and it helped that, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but the whole like using words that made sense, even though they weren't using traditional board game words, that helped it. And the flow of the rule book. And there were a lot of good examples throughout the whole thing. So between scoring, playing your cards, all that stuff. So I felt like I'm trying to, as we do the, you know, the rules explanation in the, at the beginning, I'm trying to like condense it more just to give people a general idea of how the game is played and trying to go into less detail. I'm hoping I don't know if I'm succeeding at it because I know like I'm going to have to just describe things and that way you guys can see it as I'm talking about it. I think this game is pretty easy to teach. And I felt like once we got through about a round or two, you guys had a pretty good understanding of what you wanted to do and how you had to go about accomplishing it. Mm-hmm.
Planner action, I thought it was really good. Like, I think the whole push your luck card drafting, like, really makes card drafting much more interactive. Because, like, a lot of games, it's like, here's your cards. I could mm-hmm. maybe take one that screws over somebody, but I don't really know that. And then odds are there's another card out there that works just fine for them. Card drafting is probably the least interactive mm-hmm. thing to me. But I think this really changed that by kind of like, well, I know you want this tree. And also the ability to kind of see what everyone has and what they're going mm-hmm. for. Oh, they passed. Now I can take this from them. Mm-hmm. Or do I care more about my stuff? And I don't know. I really like that piece to it. It felt like a much more interactive. I was looking at your boards to see what you were doing. That BP started taking characters and I needed the characters. And
I feel like, though, at the same point, like I really didn't even like, especially for the first few rounds, did not even look at Kiwi's board. And then like, once I was like, oh my gosh, I better start paying attention to what other people are doing because of like being able to trigger in game. So I think there is that kind of indirect element to it.
Oh, it's indirect. It's still like a pretty indirect, but it's, I think, more interactive than some other kind of games like this.
I think like for me, it was on par with other drafting games. I think the one thing with this is, you know, we've already talked about the art and it's nice to look at. I was looking at your boards, not necessarily to see like what kind of things that you were doing, although occasionally I was doing that. I was also just looking at y'all's boards just to like look at the picture that you were making.
Yeah,
you
know, that's true.
Like,
yeah.
So it was more than just like trying to figure out. It's nice to look at. So like you want to look at other people's stuff.
Right. So yeah, would you play it again, BP?
Yes, for sure. Cause I want to beat you now. I really, the art is very attractive all the way around. So it's a pretty game to look at. And that helps satisfy, you know, various elements that I really want to enjoy in my day, right? Looking at something pretty. But also it satisfies, right, kind of the the mental mechanics of pushing your luck, but also, you know, the OCD aspects. And so I feel like it's so much better than just a normal card drafting game because it has all of these other elements that you're also trying to go for.
I play it again. I think the push your luck aspect really made this a much more interesting, like, I enjoy card drafting games usually as sort of a side thing or like a quick game, like a cat lady, but they don't usually hold up when they get to more complex games. And I think this made it a much more interesting take on it. I think it made me place more interest in how I was drafting rather than just, that's the one I want, that's the one I'm going to take. So I really like that. So I would play it again. I also thought it's a little bit more of a puzzle than, I mean, I do like some puzzle games, but it was on the higher on the puzzle end, and I enjoyed it more than I enjoy a lot of just sort of abstract puzzly games. And I think it's because of the art and the theme.
Yeah, I would definitely play it again. I think it ticked a lot of boxes for mechanics that I enjoy. And I liked the way that the kind of worker placement, like none of the mechanics seemed like they overpowered other mechanics. They all just sort of like went together. On top of that, it has a nice table presence as you build out this big print. So yeah, I would play it again.
Final question. Best Bruno Cathala that we've played?
Yes. Mr. Jack was fun, but I don't know.
I thought you were kind of like, it was fun, but not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went back and because I had a small theory that perhaps it's Bruno Cathala games where he designs alone and there isn't a co-designer and we just don't like those. Mr. Jack had a co-designer. This one had a co-designer. Five Tribes and King Domino did not, but there is an exception to the rule. Seven Wonders Duel had Antoine Bauza as a co-designer, and Eric and I did not enjoy that one. So it almost worked, but it didn't. Yes, I think of the Bruno Cathala games that we've played, this is definitely my favorite.
You know, you can't do everything by yourself, and it is always nice to have a co-designer or developer to help out.
Yeah, don't design alone.
Yeah.
So are you, Kiwi, willing to try more of his games since this one's?
Well, I mean, so far, the number of games I have not enjoyed outnumbers the number of games I have enjoyed.
Okay.
But I will say, if it has a co-designer, I'm probably more apt to try it than if it doesn't.
We need a statistical analysis on Bruno Cathala, please. All right. That is Kanagawa. Take us out.
So if you have any Bruno Cathala, is that how you pronounce his name? Recommendations for us, send them our way. If you want to hear our impressions on anything whatsoever, the email is firstturntabletop@gmail.com or Twitter and Instagram. We can be found at First Turncast. And the podcasting camel. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. We look forward to hearing from you and play more games.
You might pull ahead at the end.
Oh, don't. Why do you jinx me all the time?
In the spirit of tranquility, we share the victory.
What?
Oh, wow. So technically, BP still didn't win.
I had a friend once who we'd watch Jeopardy, and she would just say all the answers, and one of them would be right, and then she would brag about it. I feel like that's what Kiwi has done here.